and Keith.
Middays 10 to 2
on WEEI.
You know, pretty interesting in watching when you take a break from everything. There's just so many assumptions about what's going on. And when things become overwhelming in life, you know, you just got to take a step back and realize what's important. Now that it's become bigger and it's more of a responsibility that I have in this position I'm in, I'm grateful because I'm able to stand on this platform with others alongside of me that have sacrificed and are going through similar things. So I'm not alone in this. You know, that's just a big thing about also mental health, you know, just coming in and being balanced with yourself first and then being able to perform.
Hour number two, Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI. He's back, baby. And Rich is so happy to be able to hear the musings of Kyrie Irving, who made his triumphant return.
But you want to see it play out, don't you?
Yes. Like,
it becomes so entertaining to see what's going to happen because James Harden has played two games with the Nets. They won both games. He's put up crazy numbers. So has Kevin Durant. And one of those wins was against the Milwaukee Bucks. So all of a sudden, this Nets team has won four games in a row. And Kyrie's back. He's missed seven games, I believe. And he is back tonight in Cleveland, by the way. Now, again, without the fans and stuff, it's not as exciting right. as it should be, going back to one of his former teams. But I think it's the most interesting thing in the NBA right now. How are these three guys going to fit together? They're super talented. And if it works, I mean, they're winning the Eastern Conference. I mean, that is as talented of a trio as you're going to find. But, man, how long is it going to play out? Like, is Kyrie Irving going to be able to take this break from the team for whatever the reasons are, and whatever they – good reasons, bad reasons, no reasons, whatever they are, come back and then fit in with a guy – who has the ball in his hands more than Kyrie does, and now Kyrie is the third best player on a team where he wants to be the man, or at the very least, maybe he acknowledged maybe the co-man, right? Like he and Durant, that's why they went to Brooklyn. But now James Harden's there. Like I just can't wait to see those two guys play together. Because remember when Kyrie would do something and then he'd yell at Jaylen Brown or he'd glare at Jaylen Brown?
Mm-hmm.
You going to do that to James Harden? You think James Harden's going to look at you and be like, oh, yeah, Kyrie, tell me what to do? I'm guessing not. So I couldn't be more fascinated by how this plays out.
By the way, James Harden, Dale, I'm not sure if you subscribe to this, but we banged in around Monday for a while. The James Harden was wearing a fat suit conspiracy theory.
Yeah, continues. Rich brought it up yesterday, and it's hard to argue with it.
There's no he looks fit as a fiddle now.
Right in your face.
Well, I don't know fit as a fiddle, but certainly a lot less of that than what we're seeing in Houston. There's no doubt.
That's good.
But is Kyrie going to really care? Like, after listening to that sulken, pouty, you know, chin on elbow diatribe, which made no sense, by the way, at no point. It's like Kyrie finished that, and I was like in my head hearing that speech that the proctor gave at the end of Billy Madison. Like, at no point did anyone benefit
from
this.
In your incoherent rambling, did you approach anything that resembles a point?
Well, so I have no idea what he said.
No.
SportsCenter put out a graphic last year, and they listed a few of Kyrie's contributions over the last year, calendar year. Mm-hmm. Donated $323,000 to Feeding America. Partner with City Harvest to ensure that 250,000 meals distributed to New Yorkers. Partner with Nike to donate 17 pallets of food and masks to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Committed $1.5 million to help pay WNBA players who opted out. Paid off the college tuition of 9 HBCU students from Lincoln University. Purchased a house for the family of George Floyd. If this wasn't Kyrie Irving, if this was NBA player X, they didn't put the little graphic and didn't put his name, you'd say, my God, what a good guy this is.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's accused him of being selfish with his time or his money.
No.
But it's a matter of, you know, what kind of teammate is he? As an NBA fan, or like whether you're a Celtics fan or you happen to now be a Nets fan, he's a guy that just goes AWOL and doesn't tell his coach. So it doesn't mean that he's not active in the community. And it is. It's a great example for the people who get angry. And we talked to some of them, Dale, when they were inside the bubble and all the players would kneel, or they'd have the messages on their jerseys, and they'd say, well, why don't those guys go out and do something? Well, a lot of them do, right? A lot of them do. They don't always advertise it and tell you in your face what they're out there doing. But Kyrie Irving, that's a nice list. That's a nice group. That's a lot of stuff that he has done to give back. So some of the things that he says aren't just lip service, but Some of the other stuff, he takes you on this long, windy road, and it doesn't mean that he doesn't think he's the smartest guy in the room. It doesn't mean he's not a bad teammate, and all these other things that we've discussed.
He seems incredibly selfish when he puts the uniform on. He seems incredibly unselfish when he takes the uniform off.
That's what's so frustrating about it, is that he can be so selfish on the court. Like, he goes into this insane alpha dog mode and he's super selfish, but then when he's off the court, he's selfless. He's giving to the community. He wants to be a leader. He wants to inspire. He continues to tell us that there are higher callings for him and there are greater causes for his time. To which end, I believe now he may only be playing basketball to make all of this money to have an impact and give back to the community. And I'm fine with that. And if he can somehow find a way for selfless off-court Kyrie to communicate with selfish on-court Kyrie and say, hey, just play third wheel. You can get to a championship. This will increase your legacy. Mm-hmm. This will maximize your community impact and give you a chance to do what you care about more. If he can do that, we can tolerate the man. And then I think the sky's the limit for this team. But if they can't, and like on-court Kyrie continues to be a hot mess and we see more of that rambling and more of the pissing and moaning on court, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, and like, do they, you know, go on this great run and, you know, the next 20 games they look like the best team, and then all of a sudden he feels like, oh, I got to go do something else. And even if some of the things he goes to do are worthy causes, it's like, all right, you made a commitment to your team. Like, are you going to play now? Like, you can still give back. You can still do these things as you are playing basketball. And that's another reason why people have suggested maybe he's a guy who retires early. Like, you got, you know, LeBron James and some of these other guys that seem like they're going to play forever. And then maybe Kyrie, because he came into the league super young. So I know he's been in the league a long time, but he's still a pretty young guy in like real world age. He might retire and go pursue these other things, which is fine. But I just feel like if you're on this team and they're paying you $35 million or whatever, I don't know, maybe play some of the games. You know, I think that's kind of what they're paying you for.
I mean, I don't think it will last through the season just based on Kyrie Irving's track record.
Right.
They would play against type if everything went great and they got through the whole season and no problems. It doesn't seem like that's a real possibility, though, does it?
So I'm starting to wonder if it could work out. And the reason I say that is Durant and Harden, at least Kyrie views as peers. Like, he, I think, views those guys as, these are other superstars. I'm a superstar. They're superstars. And I think that was one of his issues with the Celtics. He looked around and Tatum wasn't there yet. And I don't think Kyrie certainly viewed Hayward, even when he was healthy and when he wasn't, or Horford or Brown or Smart. He didn't view them as fellow superstars. So I think he had maybe had an issue with that. Whereas if he sees this team, and I think he's going to end up playing. Because I also, again, and I know Kyrie started with the audio that we played coming back about how, you know, people don't know what they're talking about and everything else. Like, okay, fine. But didn't you find it kind of a coincidence that as soon as Kevin Durant had to miss those games because he was on the COVID list or whatever, then that's also when Kyrie left? Like, he didn't leave while Kevin Durant was playing, and I wonder if Durant has the best chance to sort of keep Kyrie in check and keep him locked in the basketball is at least a better chance than anybody else has.
LeBron couldn't.
LeBron did, though, for a while. But he didn't quit in season on LeBron. He made the determination, and at the time, I think it was the right one, that says, do I want to re-up here in Cleveland knowing that LeBron's going to leave? LeBron's already left here once, and he went to Miami, left Miami, and everybody in the NBA knew that LeBron was probably going to angle his way to the Lakers. So Kyrie actually did what was smart and got out of there before LeBron did. But he played that whole, you know, that whole time with him on the court. He didn't you know, bow out.
And the thing is, the Nets right now, like, was it last night or was it two nights ago where Harden put up another 34?
Yeah, it was two nights ago.
Yep. So yeah, they win by a basket, and Harden puts up 34, and Durant puts up 30. That's a lot. You need a lot of shots for two guys to get to 64 points, Dale. So where now? I mean, obviously there are still shots to be found, shots to be had, and many of them are going to go to Kyrie. But at what point are the numbers for these guys? Harden's off to a great start. KD's got a feed as well. I mean, inarguably, when he's healthy, one of the five best players in the league. Where are these shots going to come from? And to your point, Rich, when does Kyrie then, like, yeah, I'm not happy with this, guys. Like, this isn't working out for me.
Right,
it's not going to be KD or Harden that's going to freak out and have have an on-court or off-court meltdown and start talking about, you know, justice in the world and you know why cloudy skies have an effect on people's emotions and you know Joe Biden and Black Lives Matter. He's just going to go on these random diatribes and they're going to be like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Right. Just this year he was averaging in the 7 games that he played 20 shots a game. Last year a little over that. His 2 years with the Celtics, like 18. His last year with Cleveland, just under 20. Like, is there still going to be 20 shots a game when you have Harden taking 20 or more? Durant taking 20. That's a lot.
And do either of those guys strike you? Do Durant or Harden strike you as the kind of guys who 5 strokes into the night say, "Yeah, I just don't have it tonight, dog. This is going to be
no, that doesn't exist. We've seen Harden in playoff games just keep chucking it. You know, and he'll have a night where he goes 2 for 18 from 3 or whatever, but he's like, "Ah, I'm going to keep firing it up there." Plus, Harden's a guy who's, you know, a better distributor than Irving. Like, if you just look at it, just even assist totals, like, he's always been a guy who always has the ball in his hands, whereas Kyrie is such a good dribbler and attacking the basket. Like, I wonder how that's all going to mesh, you know? And then, oh, by the way, you have maybe the league's best scorer also on your team in Durant. So the talent is off the charts, and I'm looking forward to tonight. And I know it's only one game, but I'm looking forward to seeing what it looks like.
A real world update, just briefly for you fellas, because maybe you can answer this question for me. On my TV over here, I have the inauguration on, which is just now getting underway. And a little while ago, when all of the VIPs and politicians were mingling on the stage, you saw former President Barack Obama leave Michelle Obama, walk across the stage to fist bump A-Rod. Why is A-Rod there?
Because Jennifer Lopez is performing.
Oh, so she's performing here on this. I thought she was performing later.
At some point, she's performing. I don't think it's because Biden. And the funny thing is, she's actually.
I guess my
there
question would be, why wouldn't A-Rod be there?
I mean, right? A-Rod might be the most popular athlete post-career.
I love A-Rod.
And it's insane. It is a
very limited crowd there today. I mean, yes. This. You know, they don't have...
My inauguration was bigger.
It was. But it's a very limited group of people that have been allowed in. Obviously, Congress and, you know, families. He's one of the few VIPs, quote-unquote, that I've seen up on that stage.
Right.
He hit, like, 600 dingers, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, but he's become, like, this iteration of A-Rod, not even just, like, announcer or baseball analyst A-Rod, but investor A-Rod, Shark Tank A-Rod.
The corporation,
the benefactor of A-Rod. He's turning into like his own version of Mark Cuban or Marcus Lemonis, the guy that Portnoy teamed up with for the Barstool Fund. And that's why so he's there as guest of J-Lo, who's there to perform Biden's favorite song, Jenny from the Block.
We can only hope.
She's going to alter the lyrics, obviously, so it's Biden from the Block, and everybody's super
He used to have a little, now he's got a lot.
I was just curious, because J-Lo's not there. I knew she was performing, but it's not at the swearing in ceremony, right?
Maybe it's at the socially distanced party afterwards. I don't know.
I think
Shakira
enough to,
there, and they're just going to do the halftime show.
Yeah, I haven't seen her yet.
That'd be good.
Oh boy, good. Can we have social media with everyone clutching their pearls afterwards? Like, my children were watching all of those booty shots.
Hips aren't supposed to move like that.
Her song is literally called Hips Don't Lie. Like,
I looked over and I asked Harold, "Did you take one of those little blue pills?" And he said, "No, I didn't need to tonight."
My pants are tight.
A-Rod's there and looking splendid, by the way. Very well dressed.
A-Rod always looks good.
He always looks like a million bucks.
He's a handsome guy.
He really is. Well built.
Very smooth.
Guys, turn in your Boston sports radio cards if you're going to sit here and just
stop it.
Love on A-Rod.
I love it. I don't care who knows it anymore.
Me either. Keith, I'm in the same boat as you. I hated him when he played.
Of course.
I couldn't love him anymore now.
Oh, he's the man now.
Which heel in all of your Boston sports fandom have you come about? Have you had a heel that needs
A-Rod.
A 180, if you will, or
a heel that needs 180, I would say A-Rod.
He went from being an absolute dink to being part of one of my favorite celebrity power couples of all time.
Oh, it's the power couple. Yeah, I still can't stand either Manning, still can't stand Roethlisberger, still can't stand LeBron, and then A-Rod, all in on A-Rod.
See, I love
Peyton. I can't explain it. That's just how it is.
I don't hate LeBron James as much as you do, but I am a Peyton Manning fan. I am a card carrying. I celebrate the entire catalog.
I've always been a Peyton Manning fan.
Peyton Manning?
Thank God we're socially distanced. Rich Keefe would have slapped Nick Fitzy-Stevens.
Hold on a second. The man game, the man was part of the greatest quarterback rivalry in NFL history. Brady Manning.
So you
got to
pick a side. Oh, this is more of your anti-Brady slander than I won't stand for. This is
placating the Bills Mafia.
He's changed. Yeah, he's rooting for the Bills. He's rooting for Peyton Manning. Fitzy, how dare you, sir?
I did not. I was all...
Fitzy just wants to be everybody's friend.
You
bleep that Bills fan
bitches.
Day. That's what you should change your
dare
outfit
you.
To.
That's it. I'm writing all of you out of the beer, Will.
Uncle Fitzy, the ultimate fence sitter.
I appreciate... Who nailed...
Omaha,
I said 7-9.
Omaha.
I
take
appreciated
Snake and Glenn.
Manning.
Yeah.
The contributions, the commercials, the theater. He's, you know, his the dad
Fitzy
jokes.
Fitzy actually likes Peyton Manning because he's the only guy on Earth with a bigger head than Fitzy.
Might be.
Close. Pretty close.
By the way, all of
we
this
bumped into each other. We have bumped into each other at the Giant Head Club, Rich.
Yep. Which is all that club does.
And by the way, the doorways are enormous.
We will speak with James Bite.
All of this because I asked why Barack Obama fist bumped A-Rod, and the next thing I know, we're baselessly attacking Peyton Manning.
Well. Because of COVID restrictions, you couldn't give him a full hug. That's the only reason why I didn't really
I've seen a couple of
A-Rod.
Hugs up here. I've seen a couple up here, by the way.
Hugs?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Barack Obama and A-Rod did not do the hug.
Maybe they were vaccinated.
They did the fist bump, and then they did the little half shoulder
hugs and
hug
hand
thing.
Pounds all around.
Yeah. I mean,
they
because
did the
A-Rod
run,
is...
They did the run, jump, shoulder,
oh,
or
I wish
chest
had.
Bump.
That would have been so good if they'd done that.
Because cool. A-Rod is so strong that if he hugged Biden, he would probably break him.
He might hurt crush him. The pieces.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Fitzy's Armchair GM series continues today. Last week we talked quarterbacks. This week we talk wide receivers. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. Dale and Keith with Fitzy. But first, Shime's got a trend.
More of Dale and Keith with Fitzy on WEEI.
So on WEEI.com, Fitzy's got his Armchair GM series, which he began last week. Looking at the quarterback position, obviously the area of greatest need for the Patriots. Area of second greatest need is this week's focus because, Fitzy, we need us a wide receiver or two, don't you think?
Ooh, we need a bunch, a whole crop, if not a brand new receiving room. Rich and I have said that if the Patriots gutted the quarterback room and just started with three fresh quarterbacks this season, that would be an upgrade. There's just about no combination of three quarterbacks that have thrown a pass that would not represent an upgrade. And in the wide receiving room, it's not as bad, Dale, but it's pretty bad. I mean, just think about who's under contract right now or who, between the practice squad, the futures contracts, and the opt-outs last year, could be your receiving room if you made no other moves right now. You might have Edelman, though we likely think he's going to retire. You have the 25th best receiver, according to PFF, Jakobi Meyers.
Oh.
You have Gunnar Olszewski, who's an all-pro punt returner, but has about three career catches. Maybe Marquise Lee opts back in after he took the 2020 season off due to COVID. I'm not counting on that. Dante Moncrief had a catch last year. He had one catch last year.
It was
a
big catch, though.
It was a huge catch.
It was a nice grab.
Jeff Thomas and Will Hastings, not walking through that door. And then you've got Isaiah Zuber, Devin Smith, and
Chicken Parm.
Yes.
Nice.
Chicken Parm dinner?
You forgot about a certain first-round pick, Fitzy. You didn't mention
I did on purpose because I'm looking for absolutely nothing out of him. As a matter of fact...
N'Keal Harry, you're done?
The best thing I think you could do with N'Keal Harry... Now let's get into this week's Armchair GM series.
Shine him up real nice.
It's right up the bum. So, Dale, each week I try to attack position by position the way the Patriots could improve or upgrade that spot via the three obvious routes, free agency and trade, and then the draft. And trade, I like the two trade proposals the most. So number one, I think the Patriots could go out and get a guy who would be their de facto number one, who really had a nice, nice audition this season due to injury on a team Rich and I both liked for the playoffs that we think still has a lot of offensive capability, and that's Tim Patrick, who was the number four receiver on Denver entering into the season, but injuries and rookie acclimation for KJ Hamler and Jerry Jeudy, plus Cortland Sutton banging up his shoulder, then tearing his ACL, took him out, and that kid's an absolute certified stud. They have three speedy top-flight receivers. They don't need Tim Patrick, but this guy stepped up and had an awesome season, about 50 catches, 700 yards, six touchdowns. You could have him on the restricted free agent tender, likely to be a second round. I think the Patriots should go in, tell Denver, like, we don't have many. You got a bunch. We'll give you a second-round pick. We'll give the kid 4 years, let's say 4 years, $32 million. For $8 million a year, you could get a guy to come in, step in, be your immediate number one or number two while you draft and develop somebody else. Rich, he's good. This could be like the Emmanuel Sanders thing, though. I mean, he's got some really good tape out of this season. Ashaim, yeah. I think you're kind of a Tim Patrick fan.
So I have a question.
He's a good ball player.
I need a little clarification here. So okay. Tim Patrick had basically the exact same amount of receiving yards as Jacoby Myers this year, was basically a number four Jag guy. But I'm told every time that I think Jacoby Myers could be pretty good, that he's just another guy. How is Tim Patrick not just another guy as well? He showed nothing more than Jacoby Myers this year.
I'm just saying,
like, how does this benefit you, adding a guy like Tim Patrick?
I'm more on the Shime line. I think Tim Patrick is not somebody that's really going to excite you, and I don't think you would say, oh, your wide receiver room has greatly improved. He strikes me as more of a... I don't know, like a Marquise Lee, Dante Moncrief. He's better than those guys. He's just another guy.
He's literally Jacoby Myers. What you guys have told me about Jacoby Myers is he's a great number three receiver, right? I think he could probably be more of a two bordering on one, but regardless of that debate, it doesn't matter. Tim Patrick's basically the exact same. So if you're adding another guy, Shime, he's
a little bit bigger. He's a little bit faster. He's been in the league for 4 years, and he just showed his team and the AFC what he can do.
And he had a better passer throwing him the football, and he did equal the amount of Jacoby Myers.
This was the first year that the guy had to go up and be a number one, and he actually performed
pretty still better
nicely.
Than Cam Newton.
We're also glossing over last year for Tim Patrick, because Tim Patrick also did this last season as well towards the end of the year when all those guys went down, and he eventually surpassed guys like Deshaun Hamilton and Deontay Spencer on the Broncos depth chart, and that was at the end of the year when Drew Locke started going off against defenses that, while they weren't great pass defenses, Tim Patrick proved that he can move up the depth chart. So he's now done this 2 years in a row, so it's not just this year.
I'm telling you that you can catch this guy.
Did he really do that last year, though? He had 200 yards.
Yeah, but it was all in the last month of the season.
Because it was in the last month of the season. This guy is where I watched all
those games, and I kept a very close eye on him. I did watch the All-22. I'm pulling that card. Watch it, and you'll be impressed.
Attaboy.
Can we stop with this Tim Patrick conversation?
No.
Next guy, give me somebody else.
Like, wow.
I need two pass catchers, and I'm going to scream it. I need two that are, without even a debate, better than Jacoby Myers. So if that is Hunter Henry and Allen Robinson, and I don't want to steal your list, but I'm going to say if it's guys like that, then good. I don't want a guy or two that we're even debating, he's Jacoby Myers or he's a little bit better. You need two that just conversation over, they're
okay.
better.
Let me give you one from free agency, and I'll give you one from the draft. So in free agency, I said on Monday, and I think I'm going to bang this drum until free agency opens, Allen Robinson to the Baltimore Ravens. I think that's going to happen. They're going to wildly overpay because they're going to say, Lamar, we just saw it happen. We need you to get your Steph Diggs. He's probably going to reset the benchmark. Like, you'll see the highest.
He made $14 million this year.
Yeah, and what did Hopkins get, like 3 for 70? Like, you might see a DeAndre Hopkins style, like $22, $24 million a season kind of deal for Robinson. I say you go out, you get 75% of his production for half the price. You get Marvin Jones on a nice 3-year deal. He's a rock solid. He's got 50 touchdowns in his career, Rich. The guy averages 14.5 yards a catch. He's a good receiver, and he's definitely better than Myers, and he could come in for like 2-3 years. You have a dependable veteran to put alongside him as you draft someone and start rebuilding your room. And in the draft, I'm going to say you take one of, I call them the SEC runner-ups, because Jaylen Waddle, he'll be available later than Devonta Smith will be. Everyone's going to jump all over like Kadarius Toney out of Florida because the guy had a slew of touchdowns this past season. And, of course, Jamar Smith will probably come off the board in the top six picks. But you've got guys like Terrace Marshall out of LSU, big guy, had to be elevated to a number one this year when Chase was out, played great. He's big, not as fast, got really good hands. And also the other guy in Florida. I'm so sorry. Oh, Trevin Grimes. Another rock, but he's a huge target as well. These are guys who could step in. They're bigger targets. They're faster. They just played in the NFL of the South. Because you're not, because Waddle will probably be gone too, and I just can't see the Patriots spending
and that's
a 15.
Second round, you're thinking?
I'm thinking second round, or if you want to wait to the third round, I say you go get one of Trevor Lawrence's favorite targets, Amari Rodgers out of Clemson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't mind that. Some of the big guys, no, Rodgers isn't one of them, but some of the guys that you mentioned that are big, I'm a little leery of, because one of the reasons why we heard they took N'Keal Harry, and Kearns talked about this, is like his catch radius or whatever. Like he's big and it's almost like throwing to a tight end. I'm like, that didn't work. That didn't work before. If it happens to be a smaller receiver, I'm all for it. We just saw a really small receiver, thin receiver win the Heisman, and that guy looks electric. So I'd take somebody like that. As for Marvin Jones, I agree. Like he seems like, you know, a pro's pro and
almost 1,000 yards this year.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I think
he's also 31.
Right.
Yep. So he's probably got like two good years left. But every year that people keep saying like Marvin Jones, I don't know. He goes out and has 950 yards and 7 touchdowns. Like it just keeps happening. Yes, he's
part of
that
playing with Stafford
and Kenny Golladay is on the opposite side of him.
I got some news for you, Scheim, and that's why I didn't include Kenny Golladay in the premier wide receivers you should throw money at. Golladay gets hurt a lot.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I understand that, but I'm just saying Marvin Jones has someone playing on the opposite side of him, which is what makes him
better. Games
the only way you can successfully get Marvin Jones and have him produce is if you're also getting another guy to play opposite him, so that your three guys are receiver X, Marvin Jones, Jacoby
Myers.
He's not
a number one.
In that order. He is a number two, and there's no question. Like, he is not a number one receiver.
A legitimate number two on most other teams would be a number one on a pedestal ticketed for Canton in Foxborough with how bad the receiver position was this year. They absolutely. All right, here. You know what? Actually, I have a couple other trade proposals and a couple other NFL guys. If you want to carry this over to the other side, maybe some names I haven't trotted out on the show before.
You got
if
a
you
name?
Guys want to play? I got a couple more names for you.
By the way, you were right, Fitzy. J Lo is making her triumphant appearance on the stage as we speak. That's why A-Rod's there.
Now, the best part is she and A-Rod are going to do a quick high-intensity interval training workout for everybody to get the whole thing started.
I'm into it. I could use it.
Work out 3 times a day? You know, like they must just stare at each other in the gym for like hours a day. They work out together.
Looks pretty good.
The couple
the
that works out together.
The view is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 617-779-7937. Back to Fitzy's Armchair GM series in just a moment. Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI.
More of Dale and Keefe with Fitzy on WEEI.
Well, we officially, by the way, have a new president and vice president. They're like 10 minutes ahead of schedule. And President Biden just took the oath of office. So this was supposed to have happened at noon. And I guess they got places to go and things to do.
As my football coach always said, if you're early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. If you're late, you're forgotten. So I think they're just
they're on Coughlin time at the White House today.
That's right.
They must be.
Maybe that's the way Biden's going to run things now. He probably also will get the same rosy cheeks when he's out in public for 2
Maybe he'll get the Greg Hill show off the air in time.
No, let's not go nuts.
Well, he's got dinner at 4:00, so he's probably thinking about that.
Nice. Wow. Look at you. All right, let's get back to Fitzy's armchair.
What does Biden drink, by the way? What do you think Biden's happy hour drink is?
An old-fashioned.
O'Doul's.
Well, hold on. I had an old-fashioned last night at my birthday dinner.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. It's a fabulous. A 7-7.
I love 7-7.
I thought you were going to say Metamucil.
Pepto-Bismol.
Go for that.
A little NyQuil.
Dale, listen. I'll have you know Canadian Club and Metamucil is fantastic.
It's a nice mix.
And you're regular as the trains if you do that. So might as well slap that baby down.
Oh, boy.
Let's get back to Fitzy's Armchair GM series because we were having some disagreements about the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Allen Robinson, who you kind of said is probably ticketed for Baltimore, he made $14 million last year. I mean, he's going to make $25 million, and I don't see Bill Belichick stepping in front of that train to keep the metaphor going.
How do you offer, even though, like, Bleacher Report, Pro Football Focus, I go to all these sites regularly, and so many of them have Receiver is the number one position of need, even though, Rich, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be.
Right,
and that would probably
right. I feel like
be
that's
nice.
Important also. Yeah.
And might dissuade some potential free agent wide receivers from coming here because they're like, yeah, that's a nice check. Who's throwing me the ball? You, coach? Not Caserio because he's in Houston.
Nope.
So, you know, many of them have even said Allen Robinson would make the perfect Patriot because he instantly gives them the Steph Diggs factor, gives them a number one, and gives you a wide receiver room. The problem is I just can't see Bill Belichick look at his free agent war chest and say, I'm going to allocate one third of that this season to a wide receiver as desperate as we are versus actually building the room through a series of semi-splashy veterans, maybe a trade and semi-splashy free agents, a trade and the draft. I'd love to see him do it, but Golladay breaks down too much. Allen Robinson's going to cost a fortune, maybe get the richest contract in receiver history.
But this season, they went cheap at quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end. And
but that worked out well, didn't you think?
Exactly what they paid for.
Yeah.
Yes.
They had the worst across the board. So to think that you're going to be able to, I won't say cheap, spend smartly at those positions and get like a huge uptick, I don't know how you could possibly expect that. I think when you had Tom Brady, and not like he was playing for free, but he wasn't always maxing out what he could make, but he could also make the tight ends and the receivers better. Now, you also drafted Gronk, so that helped for a while, and then you developed Edelman, so that helped for a while. But you would mix and match other guys, and because you had Brady, maybe you didn't need to spend on Julio Jones or you didn't need to spend on some of these guys. But right now, if you go through another year where you could have signed an Allen Robinson or you could have signed a Hunter Henry and you say, nope, we're gonna stick with our budget here and we're going to spend all our money on guards, well, then you're going to have another bad passing offense again.
Yeah, there's a definite chance that if you don't have an elite wide receiver, which they certainly thought, or at least Bill Belichick did, thought he was getting in N'Keal Harry, spoiler alert, you missed.
Every team playing this weekend has at least one elite wide receiver.
I love that point that we're going to see at least two elite wide receivers in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And rare is it that a Super Bowl winning team has a stud, a Devontae Adams, a Steph Diggs, and that's going to make this weekend and probably the Super Bowl that much more entertaining. All right, so if Belichick wants to maybe move on from the N'Keal Harry experiment, Mike Reese floated this out a couple of weeks ago. Going back, coming off of the heels, rather, of the Patriots-Cardinals matchup, Arizona is not thrilled with the productivity of Christian Kirk so far, and the Patriots were interested in him coming out of college. They missed. They didn't take him. And N'Keal Harry played at Arizona State, has ties back there. Who says no to a Kirk for Harry swap?
The Cardinals.
Correct. Which means you probably have to, knowing you have one, you probably only have one third round pick. It'll be a compensatory for Brady. Would you send a third and Harry for Christian Kirk, who I still believe has a higher ceiling?
Yeah, 100% I would do that. And I think that's why someone like Christian Kirk I'm way more interested in than a Marvin Jones, because I think Kirk, the ceiling is much higher. And again, he's so much younger that he could really grow into it and be a number one or number two receiver for you for a while.
Okay. Yeah, I think the way you win that out, though, you have to add somebody else that kind of, I hate to use this term, but like stretches the field a little bit. So like if you were to get a guy like Christian Kirk, you would also need to sign a guy like Nelson Agholor. I know the name isn't great, but like last season in Oakland or Vegas had a tremendous down the field reception season. Like he had like 18 yards per catch. He had almost 1,000 yards. He had kind of like this revitalization in that offensive style. And if you're going to have all these possession receivers, you need guys who can catch the ball more than 12 to 15 yards down
the field.
My man Kirk, throwing babies out
the
window.
What about Kirk Jones?
But Kirk does also have – but like, Kirk can
again,
stretch the
Marvin
field.
Marvin Jones isn't like a stretch – none of these guys are stretch the field guys. They're all getting in that mid to middle of the field range. Like you're getting all these guys
Maybe it's too far removed. I feel like Marvin Jones' best year, he led the league in yards per catch. Like he at one point was a down the field guy.
No, in Cincinnati.
Like early.
In Cincinnati,
no, in
early in Detroit. But also Christian Kirk is faster than you think, Shyam. He's not just a possession receiver.
I understand like, he's fast. You don't have to be fast to be a downfield receiver, Fitzy.
Yeah, but I hate to say it, but I don't see, you know, Ted Ginn, part of his value in every team he went to was the fact that he would drag coverage down the field. I can see why you would think there's benefit to signing Agholor because the guy still has sneaky great downfield speed.
And I think you can get him at a pretty cheap price.
On what, a 2-year deal? Is he going to keep just taking 1-year deals?
No, like a 2-year $20 million deal, like a $10.
You're going to pay $20 million for Aguilar?
Yes. Did you see him this year?
Yes,
did
but
you
that's
see
because,
him play?
But that's because he had the best tight end in football, or arguably, plus one of the sneaky fastest receivers in Ruggs. So
but I'm saying that's why if you have multiple receiving options, you become you become a better receiving core. You need multiple options.
I mean, but they're starting at such a low point that
exactly.
If you just add any of these guys, I think it's upgrade. I just think of the names that you have mentioned, and I respected Fitzy because they're all realistic. Like, you're not saying, oh, they should go get Odell Beckham and Julio Jones, who are two guys who may be traded. But yeah. Tim Patrick and Marvin Jones and Christian Kirk, I think, are realistic targets. And out of those three, Christian Kirk interests me the most. I think he has a chance to be really good.
Let me throw a couple other names out there from the piece. In free agency, the unsexiest name I could throw out there, who I could absolutely see being a Patriot, shout out to our boy Dice, who hit me to this guy, and then I went back, watched some highlights, and read up on him. Here comes the discount Chris Hogan special of the week. Going to be Alex Erickson coming from Cincinnati.
There was rumors last year about him.
Nope. Kick returner, special teams guy, possession receiver.
They got a returner.
You want to know what that does? It does nothing for your offense.
But guess what? As a number four receiver, as a number four receiver for $2 million, Shime, it does enough for your offense that, again, you have to build the whole receiving core. You have Myers.
Yeah, exactly. You have to build a legitimate receiving core. We don't need to keep taking stabs in the dark at guys we know nothing about.
Yeah, they have
like, no about Erickson's
Erickson.
Bozos off the practice.
I'd rather have
catches for 100 yards and a touchdown in December.
You're better off taking stabs in the fourth and fifth round of the draft.
My two favorite options in the draft, the Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. The sad part is, he's not going to go at 15 where I saw one mock had him to the Patriots. Again, they won't go receiver in the first round.
No.
He's not going to last till where you pick in the second round. He's probably going to go end of the first round. Complete package. The kid is fantastic. And he was a stud at the non-passing factory that is Minnesota. This guy, he does it all. And incredible hands, too. And I'd have fun with, and I think a perfect Patriot is a guy like, and I do know this is one of your guys, Shine, but I'm not bringing him up just because of that. Curtis Samuel, you can put him anywhere on the field. Running back,
that's
slot receiver, outside receiver. I would pay him good money, and I would say,
good.
Josh, here's your toy. Have fun with him. Start opening this field up because it has been.
Well, Curtis Samuel can just do so many things, and he's legitimately an established receiver in the NFL that knows how to play. He knows what he's doing. He's not like some scrubbini third guy. He is a legitimate NFL receiver that can play special teams, which Bill loves. He can play in the slot. He can play outside. He can kind of do everything, which is why I love the idea of a guy like Samuel. But after the season he just had, thanks to the Joe Brady offense, you're going to have to pay him.
Yeah, and the comment.
He put up pretty good numbers, didn't he?
Well, let me ask you guys this question. If
$12 million a year, Shime, that's what Spotrac was saying. You're probably going to have to go 4 for $50. I'd pay it.
If you're a free agent wide receiver, you're not even thinking about coming here. And I don't care what the money is. The money's going to be similar anywhere they want to go until you know who the quarterback is.
Well, if the money's more, though, you'll come here.
It's not going to be dramatically more. And if you sign the deal here and Cam Newton is suddenly your quarterback and you're thinking, what the hell have I done to myself? Don't you think Belichick has to solve that first before he can go shopping for the wide receiver?
And then Curtis Samuel's like, I got in a time machine. I just got away, got away from Cam.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important to him. Like, I think quarterback and, you know, the team's ability to win, but I think money is the most important. So if you pay more than the next guy, I think you'll get him. I think.
Yeah,
When Cole Beasley signed with the Bills, we didn't know Josh Allen was going to turn into this. Josh Allen was the guy completing 50% of his passes, and he went and signed with the Bills. You know, so I think guys will sign wherever the money is.
They will. Dale, honestly, I know you're thinking like somebody would say, all right, the checks are sort of commensurate. Belichick is a much better coach than
insert name of coach. But Belichick's never going to overpay, quote unquote. He's not going to be dramatically higher than Plan B.
Well, he overpaid I wouldn't say he overpaid because it was worth it, but, you know, nobody offered Gilmore what the Patriots offered. You know, he topped the Devin McCourty deal. Like, he went out in free agency, and he ended up signing here. you know, I don't think anybody was going to pay Shaq Mason when he paid Shaq Mason.
I also think he never thought he had to overpay because he always had Tom Brady. And now that he doesn't have Tom Brady, he may be in a position where he has to overpay.
I think you have to reset things. Now, maybe Linda would argue him, but I think you have to, without Tom Brady, think differently about how you spend money at receiver and tight end.
And can we also say, for the productivity he had this year, what he did for Josh Allen and the Bills' offense overall, Steph Diggs, 5 years, $73 million, wildly underpaid.
Worth it. More than worth it.
I just, I'm so used to him bargain basementing everything.
And he did this year, too. And shouldn't that be a lesson learned?
God, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But, I mean, for years, they also... They didn't draft a wide receiver in the first round, and the need got so dire that they ended up taking a receiver in the first round. They took the wrong one, but still, they decided at that point, hey, we're going to do something that we've never done in the history of the franchise, and that's why hopefully maybe you spend money at that position for the first time.
Wouldn't you love to?
I would love to see Belichick address a multitude of, like, you trade for Tim, like, people want that. Everyone is still hung up on that 2007 receiver room remake where he traded for Welker, got Moss for dimes on the dollar, and then brought in Stallworth on a 1 year deal. If you draft a kid, if you give Harry one more shot, I still would prefer you trade him, but let's say Harry is here, but you trade for Tim Patrick, you sign Curtis Samuel, and you draft somebody like one of the kids from Florida or maybe Terrace Wheatley from LSU. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a room. You've got a real legitimate room. The pressure's off Myers. The pressure's off Harry. If anything, great. If not, goodbye. You don't even worry about the fifth-year option because you kick him to the curb by year four. So that's how I'd rebuild it. But what do I know? I'm just an armchair GM.
Let's give you an update to a story we gave you in the first hour of today's program. We talked about Linda Holiday defending Bill Belichick, in effect, on Instagram. Linda Holiday has just put out a new post on Instagram. It is a black screen with white letters, and it says, quote, "My account will be going private in the next few hours. I am exhausted by the number of trolls and cruel people who have hammered my social media accounts recently.
Yeah.
I'm not embarrassed by anything that I've said. Oh. In fact, several news outlets understood what I meant about defensive TDs and validated it. But I am tired of trolls. I'm not sure when it became okay to verbally abuse and harass people on social media. I look forward to staying connected with my personal friends."
So what year was social media invented?
I was going to say, I can answer that question. I think 2007 was probably.
When did
Gutenberg come up with the printing press, 1562? So
yeah, that could have been. So Fitzy, congratulations to you. You picked you predicted the inevitable that she would make her account private. That was a quick turnaround by her.
Thank you very much.
She didn't have to make it till Sunday because, you know, if Tom Brady throws a touchdown pass against the Packers, she is going to get flooded with tweets and messages on Instagram.
Unless it comes from her personal friends.
A lot of trolls out there, Linda. Yes, that is true.
There are lots of trolls out there. She is done with trollskis. Done with them.
Can't win with them.
Happened a little quicker than we expected, but...
Yeah.
Not really. I said how many hours earlier. The answer was two.
Yeah. Well, she cannot win with herself in there. She's defending Bill and kind of ripping Tom Brady. That's not going to stand well.
Can't do it.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Did Bill's job of replacing Cam Newton at quarterback get more difficult by an announcement that was made last night into this morning? We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI.